We're going to need about four takes on this opening. You know that's going to happen.
of course.
Right. All right. Here we go. 3, 2.
Whenever you're ready, Nathan.
Every time. All right.
3. Let me do it. 3, 2, 1, go.
Hello and welcome to the Alp. I'm your co-host. Wait a minute. I'm not actually co-hosting this. I am your guest, Nathan Ament, and I am joined, as always, by my partner guest,
Teege
Mattil. Did I get that right?
Close enough.
Hi, I'm Teege Mattil, Director of Enrollment Success at Enroll ML. Welcome to the ELP.
See, somebody knows how to follow instructions. This is fine. This is just fine. Welcome to the ALP, the Admissions Leadership Podcast, a series of one-on-one conversations with people who have been climbing the leadership mountain in college admissions. Some are nearing the summit, some are already there. But how did they get there, and what can other climbers learn from their mindsets, habits, and experiences? I'm your host, Ken Anselman, VP for Enrollment Management at RHB, and with me today are... I should forewarn listeners that the three of us all used to work together at Lawrence between 2008 and 2012. Is that when you overlapped? Was it 4 years?
4.5.
Yeah, that's pretty close. Yeah, 4.5.
4.5, but who's counting, Teege? And you both have gone on to even bigger and better things from there. Welcome to the crossover pod, Nathan and Teege.
Thank you. We are thrilled to be here. One of us more than the other, but we're still together, collectively thrilled.
Okay, this is good. Nathan's just not going to speak anymore.
No, no, because I'm too excited to speak. I'm just too excited.
Perfect. They are the creators and hosts of the excellent podcast, the Admissions Director's Lunchcast, otherwise known as the most productive lunch meeting you'll take all week. Did I get that right, Teege?
We don't tend to go with the NPR tone at the end, but otherwise you got it.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. That's fine. As we're recording this, I'm aware that it's old home week, like old Lawrence home week. You guys just dropped an episode with our dear former colleague, Paris Wicker. Mm-hmm. Paris is an assistant professor of, she's doing what? She's at University of Buffalo, educational policy, right? Or at leadership?
Yeah, educational policy and leadership, yeah. I believe it was. Yeah.
And then last week, I dropped an episode with Karin Smith, who I know you also had on the show. You've also had Ryan Gebler on a while back. Are there other folks? I'm trying to remember if you've had anybody else from the Lawrence.
We had
Steve.
We had Steve, and we had one episode.
The Syverson.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And we had one episode where both of our guests bailed on us at the last minute, and we quickly called in Chuck Erickson and Beth Petrie.
Oh, gosh.
And they saved the day.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, and like,
same episode.
But think about that. Like, Chuck, Beth, there are so many folks that came through the Lawrence shop that are still either in or adjacent to this profession. I mean, it's like Chuck, Beth, Nicole Bensley, Mohammed Bey, Galen Rose, Seth Harris, Jen England, Susan Chadwick, Sarah Beth Holman. I mean, it was an embarrassment of riches. I'm calling it the Steve Syverson effect.
It's not wrong. It's not wrong. Because I joined in, I think I came up in 2006.
You did.
And there was like 3 or 4 of us that started all at the same time, right? Nicole and I think Mohammed started then.
Yeah.
And there was, and Seth started, we started the same day.
Speaking of Steve, he's out here in Denver for the next couple of days. I'm going to be meeting him for lunch tomorrow. And I'm wondering if I should tell him about the time I nearly wiped out his entire legacy just mere days after stepping into his role when he retired from Lawrence. Do you guys still hold memories of the terribly conceived admission scavenger
hunt?
What was it? The Amazing Race?
It was Amazing Race. It was the Amazing Race.
Yes. Yeah. Terrible.
No, terrible. Ken, that was brilliant. I loved it. I was on the most competitive team. We were in the lead. It was me, Nicole, and Dustin.
Shocker. Yeah.
And when you pulled the plug on it, I was like, absolutely not. I want to get up to that cupola. I'm not done.
Well, and Nathan, I still have images of you just picking up the football and just darting across the Bonta Bowl field with it. I don't even think you were following the instructions where you had to like pass it back to somebody. I think you just booked it.
Yeah, I've repressed all those memories. Yeah. I do remember Tej being very disheveled, though, after scaling that wall. That's well, about all I got.
Yeah, it was about 90 degrees, and it was not well. I didn't think it all the way through. I'll just put it that way. But
right, but great team building. It was great. It was super great.
For those that survived it, yes, we were stronger as a team afterward. But yeah, okay, great. Thanks. I think before we get to talking about the lunch cast, and I do want to get there, but I think it'd be helpful to share a little bit more because since we, you know, you both came out of the Lawrence shop, what are your current gigs and sort of how did you get there? And let's, I'm going to go alphabetically in reverse with Tej with exclamation
point. Yes. And yeah. And can I have to say, thank you for getting my name correct. Not every podcast that I'm on, do they do that? So that's great.
It's a struggle.
Yeah. So my admissions career started with you, Ken. You saw something in me and gave me an opportunity in 2008. So that was...
I remember that call.
Yeah.
I do. I heard...
Do you remember the lattes, though? Do you remember the lattes and the iced coffee drinks?
Yeah, no. But what I remember he squealed, actually, when I... I mean, you really did. In the nicest, most honest way. Like, you were thrilled to get the call because I think you were, the other path was you're going to be a banker, yeah. Were you not?
Yes, it was terrible.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's new news to me. Like, really? Yeah. A banker?
Yep. My high school co-op job was at Associated Bank here in Wisconsin, and that was the other path I was on, and you saved me from it. But I worked in admissions for 5 years at Lawrence University, got really involved in...
Look how quickly he walked away from that, Nathan.
that was a sprint. Grief. Yeah, like he was climbing a wall.
External communications, launched into Zinch. And then after 5 years, I took a role as director and then eventually dean of admissions up at Northland College in Ashland, Wisconsin.
And I remember that too.
Yeah.
Well, I remember coming back from... Oh, gosh, I don't remember where it was, but... Rick Smith was handing out job descriptions for this new executive director of admission position at Northland. And I saw it. I'm like, I'm going to have to give this to Tej, aren't I? Mm-hmm. And I did.
I took your advice.
You did all the things. Yeah.
And then came down for 2.5 years. I was vice president of enrollment here at Carroll University, just outside of Milwaukee, before finishing my time on campus at DePaul University, back with our friend Beth. Indiana. Yeah. And then for the last 2 years, I've been working on the vendor side at EnrollML, a very different, exciting, but different structure, different flow of every day.
Oh, sure.
For sure. But I am, I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it.
Thanks, Tej. Mm-hmm. That was the quickest encapsulation of 16 years I've ever experienced. Well done.
It's the vendor bio. He's used to like having to get in and out of that slide deck really fast.
Yeah.
Like like one slide and that's it.
You're right. Okay. So can you beat that, Nathan?
No.
Either
because I'm older. Either as he reminds me all the time.
By going over. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So I did not start at Lawrence. I actually started at Augustana College, which is my alma mater. Right. Yeah. But that was after a short year as a high school band director.
That's right.
Go back to. Yep. So I went to Augustana for music ed, came out, did high school band directing, and then stumbled into admissions like a lot of people do. With another former guest and a good friend of mine, Megan Cooley, called me up and said, hey, an admissions counselor just resigned. It's August. Do you have a job? And I said, no, I will be out there to interview. So spent 3 years with them and then did regional recruitment for Northern Michigan University. Yeah. Yep. Working the CPS network there, which was a lot of lessons learned, completely different than the territory I had at Augustana. And then we were looking to, we just had a baby at the time, and I was looking for something that maybe paid a little bit more than a 10-month position at Northern Michigan.
So, hey, let's look at Lawrence.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a director job. The thing is that you needed to have 5 years of admissions experience and a music degree. And I thought that's a really, really
specific.
You have to very specific, you know, and a tight needle to thread there. So I applied, and we loved Wisconsin because we vacationed in Wisconsin. And that's so right. Went up and met Steve and fell in love with Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And then spent 6 years at Lawrence and really, really enjoyed it. All the great people that were there.
That was when you first became a boat owner, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. Okay. One of 12. Yeah, one of 12. That's another story.
Another story.
And then wanted to move back down to Illinois. We had two kids by that point, two boys, and wanted to move closer. So I went and worked at George Williams College, which was a satellite environmental school for Aurora University. That was an interesting little 10-month gig.
Yeah.
And then ended up going, following the VP there up to St. Mary's of Minnesota. Did an interim AVP job, director job at St. Mary's, where I really got connected with the Catholic education.
Yeah.
I'm not Catholic, but thought that would be an interesting spin. And then was commuting, though, from Sycamore, Illinois, your birthplace.
That's right. Yes, where life offers more.
In Sycamore.
Mm-hmm.
And
home of the Great Pumpkin Festival.
Great Pumpkin Fest every year. And so then I just implemented TargetX at St. Mary's, and they offered me an account manager sales job, and I could work remote. So I did that for the family. Did that for 2 years, learned a ton being on the vendor side, learned about CRMs. And then moved over to Kelmscott EDU at that time, which is now Matera, which powers Slate Print, print company. And then... they downsized, and so I was looking to go back to a college campus, and I had an offer on the East Coast, and I had an offer down south, and we were making this decision at the end of December in Illinois. So
south is looking pretty good.
Pretty good. And my wife Jamie said, if we're going to move 1,000 miles, we might as well move someplace warm. So we moved down to Loyola University, New Orleans, and ended up relocating to just the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain. So I was doing a commute, but really enjoyed I call it my southern sabbatical down there. And
with the Jesuits, it was a retreat.
It was a retreat. Yeah, yeah, a retreat for a lot of discernment.
Yep. Look at you.
Look at there.
Nice. See?
Yeah. Comes back too easily. So, and Loyola was an interesting chapter, but learned a lot and went down as a director, ended up moving into the VP role, did a lot of great work down there. And then we were looking to come back up here to be with family last year. And last June, took the job here at Knox College, and really enjoying our time back in, especially back in Western Illinois. It kind of feels like coming home after going to school at Augustana.
Oh, yeah.
But also being back in the CTCL, being back in the ACM, and being back in the Midwest, right ahead of now, our two boys are going to go off to college, and
I'm
probably going to go to a Midwest school. So we'll be a little bit closer.
Is the one who was born before you moved to Lawrence?
He's a senior, Noah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. This is a leading question.
Yeah, he's a senior, and
has he made his decision yet?
He probably, by the time this airs, will make it public. Yeah, he's gonna go to Lawrence, which is kind of crazy to
isn't
think
that
about, that it all comes back around.
It was a totally leading question, Nathan, but just wild. That's congratulations. And
thank you. And gonna major in music, because he's a pretty awesome jazz trumpet player and jazz vocalist, but going to do a double major in music or jazz studies and pre-law. So looking forward to that.
Oh, tree, apple, no distance.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well, I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. He really, I don't have the lawyer thing. So that's a new thing for me, but our boys are both definitely musicians, and it's been pretty cool to watch and be a band dad instead of a band kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's, thank you both for getting us caught up to speed on how you got where you are. I do want to pivot to the show. I want to know how this show came to be. Mm-hmm. It's the approach has been so smart, you know, delivering timely, relevant content. And it's just applicable, actionable stuff that you're doing. And you've got it. I don't know how you decided to do it sort of to coincide with the admission cycle, but also professional life cycle of admission practitioners. It's like, it's, you guys are writing it, well, recording a textbook. How'd it come to be, and what role does TJ's Melrose Place cast play into it?
Ken, we don't talk about that.
Why? It's out there. It's in the domain.
Yeah, it's got 7 listeners, I think, regularly, right?
Including the 2 hosts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Teach has gone really quiet again.
Really quiet. We don't speak of the Melrose cast, Ken. I mean, like, you just hit the third rail. So,
Nathan, why don't you tell us how we started the Admissions Director's Lunch cast?
Well, as I understand it, there is a contested history of how it came to be, right?
There is.
Different versions of the story. So,
yeah. I'll start. And surprise. Then Deidre come in with all of the colorful commentary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it started, the way that I remember the story is that it started because we were, so once Teej left Lawrence, once we both left Lawrence, we still stayed in pretty close contact. And that's where the friendship began. Friendship actually
after
began.
You left, because Teej was your tormentor when you worked together.
Pretty much. I was just going to say you were down the hall in Wilson House, and you could kind of witness it from afar. But my office was next to the kitchen. And so every time that this guy came in to make his iced lattes every 50 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes, he'd come in and chat and then just give me a hard time all day, every day. Mm-hmm.
Well, at least your office was next to the kitchen and not where poor Chuck's office was, which was right next to the bathroom with the tub.
Yeah.
We'll steer without away from a that. Fan.
So we stayed friends after I went down to George Williams, and then he went to Northland, and we went our ways and would chat. But especially when I was at Loyola, I would have, like as mentioned, I have this hour-long commute across this causeway, this 26-mile bridge across Lake Pontchartrain.
That's got to be beautiful, though. I mean, just to pause on that, just did that ever get old? Although I suspect traffic was tricky on that sometimes.
It got old when the weather was bad.
Yeah.
But then when the weather was good, it would actually become hypnotic, which was probably bad too. So
sure. Yeah. Sure.
But it reminded me of driving across Illinois with the cornfields. It just was the same thing over and over again.
True.
But yeah, it was good, but it was a time for me because so many things had changed or were constantly changing at Loyola.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I was getting dealt problems that I had never really seen before, especially, well, geographically different problems. I'd never really experienced New Orleans before, but then also just all kinds of stuff that was happening at this school that had an online program, a graduate program, and a pretty substantial, I also had student financial services. So I'd never done with student accounts or any of that.
Well, and your
stuff,
portfolio just kept swelling over time when you were there quickly.
Right.
Over time.
Right. So I would call him, I'd get on St. Charles Avenue, and I would just, you know, every time it would just be like, Tiggy, like, what am I going to do today? Tiggy, what's going to happen today? And can you help me with this? So we would chat the whole time and then, you know, goof around, of course. And that never, ever happens. You know, we know it was totally serious the whole time.
Yeah, of course it was.
And so then pandemic hit, right? And we said, we got to do something. And just because we weren't doing conferences and we wanting to connect with people. And we thought we didn't know what corner of the admissions little world, and it really is a little world that we could get into, because you had already started this podcast and talked about leadership. And it was going really well. And so we wanted to do things because of what we were facing, both, you know, we're teachers up in Northland, and then he was at Carroll, and we're like, there's just a lot of things that you have to get done throughout the day that are not big picture. And there's got to be a market here for admissions directors of like tangible things. You'd be like, wow, that's a great idea. I never thought of that. And then the final thing that I had based it on was the Jesuits are actually really good about sharing data, of course, like everybody, but also sharing ideas. And before the pandemic had hit, I had done a couple of director and VP gatherings where we just sat around a table with other Jesuit VPs and shared ideas. And it was, we're all in competition with each other, but we all just wanted to see each other be successful. And they were tangible things, you know. We talk about discount rates or whatever else, but it was really just tangible stuff. And so I pushed Tej and I said, there's got to be a market. There's got to be a corner for this, that we can do this and get it out there. And how can we approach it? And then he came up with the idea of having the same topic addressed by both sides of the desk, yeah, so that we would also open up the network or open up the audience to the school counseling community,
yeah,
and the admissions directors, and hit it from both sides. But really it was to try to get that perspective of the school counseling community into the ears of the admissions directors, because they couldn't go to these conferences because of the pandemic. God,
so smart. I love that.
Yeah. And that's it. That's the end of the story. Next question.
Nope. Yeah. Well, but I do. Oh, go ahead, Tej.
It was a little different, a little different from my memory, Ken.
Okay. Okay. Good. Well, then let's absorb and I have this, to, and then I'll ask some questions.
I have to tell you, you have a starring role in this story, as I remember it as well. So Nathan was correct. We left Lawrence, and that was when our, I'll call it our colleagueship, really stepped into high gear. And he would call me when he was on Lake Pontchartrain, and fine, he was, you know, admiring boats down there that he might want to take apart to build a new boat. And he would, we started talking about admission strategies. And if you remember Eric Sickler from Staymates, who's now retired, but Eric Sickler,
yeah,
back in the day, he had a short podcast with a friend where he was literally on the phone, on the phone. So it was like 5 or 10 minutes. You could hear the car in the background. And I made some, you know, a mistake for sure, but I made some passing reference to that to Nathan, and it planted the idea, and he would not let go of the need to, like, we need to do a podcast. And I was like, Nathan, okay, I don't know how to do it. I don't have a microphone. I don't have time. Like, I kept coming up with excuses. And one time,
all the excuses,
he kept coming back to it. And then one time he called and he said, Tej, Ken has a podcast. And I was like, yes, he does. It's great. And
if Ken can do it, anybody can.
And I still said, I'm still like, no, fine. And then time goes on, and for fun during the pandemic, I started a little podcast about a 1990s soap opera with a friend that nobody listens to. Nobody should listen to. It does not match my professional brand at all. And at that moment, when Nathan,
I will not
put a link to it in the show notes.
When Nathan found out I was doing that, I had lost all ability to fend off this desire. Yeah. But Nathan, I actually think it was your idea to do two different interviews, because we were looking for what's a different take. And what we ended up with, in all seriousness, both Nathan and I were sitting vice presidents at the time. And the intention that at least that I have for the podcast is, what do we want people to say to our admissions directors when we're not around? Let's find ways to bring that out.
What has surprised you about the podcast? I mean, you have, as of this recording, what, 93 episodes out there in the world? That's what Apple Podcasts is telling me.
Counting the summer sessions and him and I really kind of, I think we were both kind of stunned when you said that number, because we focus on the episodes of the seasons, but really when we do the extended cuts, it really is 93, which is kind of incredible.
It is. Did you... I don't know how long this one's going to last. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know how long our conversation's going to last, but how long this podcast is going to go on? These take a lot of work, right? Although if you've got a partner that does all the work for you, then it doesn't take as much work, right?
Bingo.
Yeah. Well done, Nathan. I got to get me a Tej. But
yeah, well, because he's paying, because he never told me about the Melrose test. So he's still like, I'm still getting back.
That's your leverage. No, but in all seriousness, did you think you would be talking about this thing today?
Absolutely not. Okay. No.
How long did you think you were going to do this for? And I mean, you don't know if it's going to find an audience, if what sort of feedback you're going to get. So, but what have you learned since you launched this? And what have you heard from people?
Yeah. You know, Nathan, if it's okay, I'll start first. And if it's not, I'll just keep going anyway. I thought...
This is what it was like when we worked together.
I really thought one season was going to kind of be a wrap, and that we were, you know, that it wouldn't find its footing, and that Nathan would have been satiated by the fact that I did it. I bought the stupid snowball microphone and now we can move on. But it really caught on. The moment for me that I still remember, Nathan and I were kind of working through the exhibit hall, and we went up to someone and he recognized our voices, and like He practically asked for an autograph. Like he was so excited. Really? And it was weird to us that anyone was listening at all, even though we can see the download statistics or whatever. But that's sure. But I would say what surprises me, Ken, is just how open so many people are to giving of their time, their ideas, their energy to be a part of this project.
Yes. Okay. Has anybody turned you down? Has anybody said no to your invitation? I'm guessing it happens rarely.
If we get into scheduling stuff, that's the only time it really has happened, right? Where it just didn't work out, but we always say, hey, can we go to a, you know, next season or whatever. I think.
But it's not a lack of willingness. It's not that people don't want to do it. It's.
Right. Like, I think a couple seasons ago, you sent out a survey, right, Tej, of like, hey, here's like, you know, tell us what you would want to hear on the Lunchcast. And if you're willing to, participate or be a guest, and if you are, then, you know, who can you recommend? I mean, within a matter of 24 hours, I think he had well over 150 responses on that Google form. Like, that was
nuts. And 19 of them were Chuck Erickson using different email addresses. So, now, Ken, since we're on the topic, I've never gotten this from you. What compelled you to start the ELP?
Wow. Thanks for turning it around. I said you could ask questions. It all started with a mid-morning mojito, to be honest. I'm not kidding.
I know you're not.
It was June 2019. I was taking a vacation with Gabby and Ryan and Katie. We went to Cancun. It was the first time we'd ever been there. It's like 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm down on the beach by myself because it would take them forever to come out of the room. And I basically had the beach to myself. And I don't know how I got on the idea of a podcast, but this will be a little bit of a downer, but you remember Tom Weed?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From Butler. So Tom had a stroke not that long before. I don't remember exactly when it was, but I remember he had a stroke, and I'd been thinking a lot about him and sort of his generation, you know, Ray Brown and Steve Syverson and Scott Friedhoff, and it was a lot of dudes, but that was also, I think, kind of the shape of the profession that I came up in. I thought of the folks that had sort of taught me how to do it, and started thinking about what can our generation, my generation of folks who are now in leadership, pass along to the next generation? And how can we do it in a way, sort of like what you were talking about with the pandemic? Not everybody gets to go to conferences. Not everybody gets to go hang out in the room where it happens with these folks. But how can you give people access to the way those folks think and the things that they've done? Mm-hmm. And then, like, it just kind of hit me. What about a podcast? I'd been listening to Conan O'Brien and Tim Ferriss and honestly, Tom Golden and Brad Weiner's podcast. Mm-hmm. I was a huge fan and loved what they were doing. And I thought that maybe that's the way. And I remember Gabby finally came down to the beach and I told her about it and we were just pacing up and down. Well, I was pacing, she was just walking, but I was just animated and inspired by this idea. In the back of my head, I'm like, this is never going to happen. I'm not going to follow through. It's going to be like every wonderful idea that doesn't become a thing, but it wouldn't let go. And, I wrote a list of people I wanted to reach out to, and Angel Perez was the first person I wanted to reach out to. And he was the first person to say yes. And it just kind of kept going from there.
Yeah.
But same thing. I didn't know this was going to become a thing. It was just sort of a, let's see how it goes. And then I immersed myself in how to podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's so I dropped it right before NACAC 2019. And the same thing sort of happened. Like, there were people that would come up to me and say, I listen to the show. I love it. And I'm like,
yeah.
Right. Like, you know, the people that, you know, you can see the downloads and listens or whatever, but it doesn't translate into people. But when people come up to you and it touches them or spoke to them in a way, it's like the best payment you can get for this. And it reminds me, that's why I did it in the first place. That's a long-winded answer, but that's, That's how it came to be. But honestly, it started with a mid-morning mojito.
Well, can I?
It was noon. It was 5 o'clock somewhere, like in Western Europe. But
listen, it works. It counts. And I love the structure that you have, the way you could dive deep with individual guests. And I every time I see it come through and it's someone I know, I'm so excited to hear their journey that I didn't know, right? And then sometimes I get just as excited when it's someone I don't know and get to meet them all over again. Like one of my favorite episodes you have done was with Joan Liu. And when I met her at NACAC, I felt like I knew her so much because of the podcast. So great work. Great work.
Thank you.
Yeah,
she's, God, I've gotten to know, and it's not like I know all these folks really well. I know of many of them. I'm just like, would you want to come on? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I have this gift of getting to hang out with them. Somebody described the show to me as, it's like I'm sitting at a bar on the stool next to you and your guest and just eavesdropping on the conversation, which is like the nicest thing I've ever heard about the show. But it's, but yeah, thanks for asking. Thanks for giving me a chance to tell that story.
Well, and
okay, that
and
was admitting
fun. To your morning mojito, which, you know,
come on, man. I was on vacation.
Yeah.
I was on vacation. It was during Slate Summit too. I remember because I was getting texts from, folks on the team who were there.
That there is not a Slate Summit that Beth is not texting out what's happening in a live stream sort of way.
that is true. That is true. Anyway, so thank you. And so the Melrose Place cast actually does have a role in the origin of the lunch.
It
cast.
Does. He tricked me into it, and I didn't realize I signed a contract for 10 seasons. So made it through 7.
Does the structure today resemble what you thought it was going to be? Have you evolved it over time?
It does. We've loosened a little bit from time to time. We did an emergency episode about when the FAFSA was delayed again.
Was that when Nathan was in the south of France?
When Nathan was in the south of France. The one video episode we did, actually.
I think it was the 50s bedroom, right?
Yep,
isn't that 50s, what it was? Yeah.
The bungalow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But by and large, the structure of the season has held the same. The structure of each episode has held the same. Where I think we've experimented a little bit is kind of theming each season. So one year we did one season we interviewed ACAC leaders, presidents, president-elect, et cetera. One season we did Back to Basics.
Was that so that you could get yourself invited to be a speaker?
It was a happy little accident.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
No idea what you're talking about, Ken.
I see you, Ohio. Yeah. Anyway. No, but that's smart. Teach went silent again. If I actually could see the screen, you would have the flat face, like where there's absolutely no expression. There it is. Oh, he's smiling. Oh, wonderful. Turn it off. No, but that's when I mentioned earlier, there's the professional life cycle element to it too. Like, you know, you speak to things that are relevant to folks, even as sort of like what I'm doing with mine, but they're on their own journey, and you're sort of dropping in and giving them nuggets to help augment whatever they're being trained or maybe what they're not being trained. But it's just, it democratizes training for admission, professional development for admissions folks.
From people that are not VPs.
That's right.
We've, again, because you interview a lot of the leaders in the profession, which is spectacular. We wanted some other voices to be out there on the podcast.
And good for you. Good for you and good for them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I think people are always just struck of like, I can come on. And they're like, yeah,
you can. Of course you can.
It's just the two of us like talking about something like we were standing in a college fair.
Yeah.
So I think that's what makes it relatable. I think the other thing, TJ, that's been interesting, at least for like this current season that we're in right now, a lot of independent counselors recommended topics. And that was really fascinating for us to see how many independent counselors were listening to the podcast. And I never in a million years thought it would come up in my interview for another vice president position. And like the podcast, literally in round one, within like 10 minutes came up because one of our board members is independent counselor. Mm-hmm. And so he'd already like laid the groundwork with the search search firm and with the search committee. Like, Nathan's podcast with Teej is a really big deal. And I'm like, I wasn't prepared because I was all thinking like, you know, campus-based stuff, like strategy, whatever. And then it really kind of took me aback when they're like, well, what have you learned from the podcast? And I'm like, oh man,
yeah,
that's crazy.
How'd you
that's
answer really the question? Crazy. Not to make you have to interview for the job again, but how did seriously, what have you learned? I can't, it's got to be an enormous amount.
It's a lot of I would say it's in the same line of why I really valued my experience working at TargetX and Kelmscott.
Okay.
It gives you this perspective, all these other campuses, all these other people, and it really opens up the geography. And for me, you know, leaving Lawrence and leaving Aurora to go up to Minnesota. I'd never worked in Minnesota, but then going down to the South, like I didn't, you know, I only had Midwest experience at that point. So I think you can realize pretty quickly, like we've had people on from all across the country. And the different problems or the different issues that they're facing in different parts of the country has really opened our eyes to like, one, a lot of the problems are the same inherently when you boil them right down.
Yeah.
But then two, like it just gives me a different perspective on how I can figure out pretty quickly what works for this particular campus here because I'm able to assess it, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah.
So
interesting. Teej, how about you?
I don't remember the question.
See, this is the problem. This is why we have scripts, Ken, because otherwise if you don't follow the script and like we literally work in a Google Doc and I have written notes to him, like pay attention, you have to come back.
I thought the question was, what have you learned? And I thought I answered that already. But is that, what did I miss? I'm sorry. I'm so lost.
No. Yeah. No. Oh, you know what? Maybe I need to follow the thread of the interview a little bit more closely than Teej.
Do you know, I this is something that I've taken away kind of as a direct lesson is which topics are kind of most popular and tangible to at least our listener base. Our episodes about visits straight to the top every single time. And the ones about career trajectory for admissions leaders skyrocket up. And so that's telling to me.
And what we think would be hot topics or we think there's the topics that are, you know, are covered at the conferences or whatever else.
Yeah.
Are just never listened to. It's pretty crazy. And it doesn't mean we don't want to keep putting them out there. But it's just, it really does kind of baffle us on what's popular and what's not when you look at the downloads on the back end.
Yeah. I love though how you're sourcing from your audience, like just playing off of what, I mean, it only makes sense, but playing off of what they want and following their lead and giving them, having relevant guests talking about relevant topics. That's a data-driven podcast. How about it? It's not a vanity play.
We are admissions people, I guess, after all.
So. Well, yeah, but there are a lot of podcasts out there. Before I get to the rapid descent, I want to ask, there's a question I occasionally ask folks, and I didn't spring this one on you ahead of time, so I just want to get your answer in the moment. But I'm curious if you want to take a swing at it. So you wake up to discover you've been given 24-hour access to a superpower that can only be used to affect a lasting change in the higher ed space. What would it be? What's the superpower and what would you do with it?
Oh, you've asked this question of your guests, and I remember having an answer. I remember. And it comes from you, Ken, actually. Yes.
Really?
Does.
No, because that sounds like a setup.
it would be putting a cap on merit aid, tying merit aid as a percentage of tuition. And I think that would put some market forces on the sticker price.
Or what if we did away with merit aid altogether?
I cannot.
And used it to reset prices. I know. Well,
yep.
well,
I,
No, what? You backed away from
it. Here's the thing. So, Ken, I was with you at the NACAC Day on the Hill when just after the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was started under President Obama, and there was a speaker there.
Oh, that's right. I forgot what a wonk you are.
Yep. There was a speaker there that gave a presentation, and I cornered him afterwards, and I was like, hey, this is what we need you to focus on, because he was complaining about college being too expensive. And I said, this is it. Here's your problem, merit aid. And he looked at me like I had lost my mind. And he said, well, a lot of middle-class families really rely on those scholarships. And I was like, oh, of course. He's fallen into it too, because he thought he earned the coupon. And that's when I realized the mess that we're in. So
thank you.
Yeah, Tate. So I don't think we could do away with it altogether. But I do think we could put some market forces on sticker prices by limiting by percentage how much of a merit aid discount you can get.
Okay. Nathan, how about you?
I don't know. I think my superpower would be to basically do an influx of cash to all these colleges.
Right.
To
all of them or just the ones that need it?
Well, the ones that need it.
I've got a list.
To get this. right, exactly. A big list. But to get this, you have to peel off part of your endowment or whatever it is to improve the infrastructure at these places. Right. I really think that that's what it comes down to. And that's what continues to cannibalize and push the sticker prices up and the merit aid up and whatever. I mean, it's
deferred
mold issues, this deferred maintenance stuff that just, because you can't afford it. And then that's like one layer. And then the second layer is compensation of the faculty and staff. And that's what's also slowly killing this is that, I think we're in an arms race with faculty right now, and I think it's going to happen quickly with staff. And that the bigger schools are going to continue to eat up the faculty from the smaller schools because they'll be able to pay them more.
Right. So, well, on that note, gentlemen.
Yes. Actually, Ken, can I ask you a question? You may choose to cut this, but when you're training a new admissions counselor and you tell them to go hiking in the Colorado Rockies during Colorado Week, do you feel an obligation to tell them that the previous year you missed a meeting with an independent counselor due to altitude sickness? Do you feel an obligation for that, Ken?
God bless Vern Church. And I didn't miss the meeting, but I did show up feeling poorly. If we were on screen right now, you'd be shaking your head saying, no, you missed it. I don't think I missed it, but I was not at my best. And that's when Vern tried to introduce me to the restorative powers of wheatgrass.
Yes. Well, you did send me to the wheatgrass shot too, which I am still bitter about.
Hey, it could have been worse, right? So, I mean, you got to, and how odd that I ended up out here in the Colorado Rockies, but your example was how to do it in Colorado. Poor Chuck Erickson went for, I think, 2 years thinking that the only thing he was allowed to eat when he was on the road was beef jerky and Gatorade, because that's what I had got at the gas station when we left the Minneapolis CTCL fair and drove back across the state. Anyway. Thanks, Teej.
Yeah, well, that was the Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. That was when we went on that first conservatory admissions trip, when Teej and I actually bonded. And there was so many stories we can't even. That's a three podcast in one. But that's when he was buying one taco at Taco Bell, because Chuck had trained him.
That's true.
Oh, no. Pay it forward, don't pay for anything. Him. Oh, great.
Right, don't pay for anything. And like that, don't you know that's coming right off the endowment, Teej?
Yep.
Like, literally, because he's also an alum.
So, yeah, you cut Chuck open and he bleeds Lawrence blue and white, and he's a first round draft pick on the team too. I just wish I had taught him better on how to eat on the road. I didn't. Another case of me not thinking necessarily early on how people may have been looking to me for clues on what they should be doing.
Right.
Lesson learned. All right, you guys ready for the rapid descent?
I have been looking forward to this moment.
Really? Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Then we'll start with Nathan.
Well played, Ken.
But you can each answer the question in turn. So we'll go, each of you get a whack at the first question, and then we'll move on to the second question. So question number one, Nathan, what's your walkout song?
Well, I thought long and hard about this, but I kept coming back to this.
It's called the rapid descent, Nathan.
I know, but that's not how I work. You know, that's not how I work. Thought long and hard about this, and I just kept coming back to the one song that just through my whole life has been there.
Yeah,
The Humpty Dance by Digital Underground.
That's not where I thought this was going to end, but okay.
I still like the surprise teach, you know, once in a while.
Fun. Okay. Teach, how about
I know you're expecting to hear Christina Aguilera, but it actually is Super Queen by the cast of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Star Season 4.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Question number two. Teach, you get this one first. What's the best thing you've read lately?
It is the book. I actually got it when we worked together, Ken. It is Say It Like Obama, The Power of Speaking with Purpose and Vision to touch up on my public speaking.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nathan, how about you?
Well, I live with a librarian, so I have a lot of books, and one that she told me to read, and I wasn't going to because it was 715 pages long, but The Covenant of Water by Abraham Verghese.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nathan, your ball. What are you eager to read next? What is Jamie queued up for you?
I was like, keeping with the theme, whatever she recommends. So there when we I go. Finish a book, yep, it just goes. I was like, what do I need to do next?
And okay. She gave me a book. God, how lucky you are. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Teach.
Yes, you can cut this if you need to, Ken, but I would probably say I'm really excited to read Climbing the Admissions Leadership Peak, Lessons from the ELP when it is released. But also, my brother just released the fifth version of his book, Lake of Dragons, and I have that on its way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What's a podcast you particularly enjoy? I like the Melrose Place cast myself.
You gotta stop. People cannot find me there, but...
Okay.
Right, but don't you want to double your listenership?
Yeah, you're going to be up to 14 by the time this one's over.
Oh, okay.
All right.
One of my favorite... Obviously, I listen to many of the admissions, one yours included, Ken, ours, but I love... There's a podcast called Bitch Slap, which is about Melrose Place, and it is the raunchiest, dirtiest interpretation of it. I love it. Ken, you would be embarrassed just to hear 2 minutes of it.
I was embarrassed when you said the title, Teach.
I thought you might be. But I've been watching. Ken, I've been seeing you let some curse words slip through.
On this show?
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Laura Cobb earned herself an E rating on hers. It's great. because Jen Dewar didn't go there, with her quota. Anyway, sorry, that's a deep cut. Nathan, podcast.
Well, my other side hustle beyond the podcast is I'm a licensed Disney World travel agent. So
that's my
favorite, which I listen to every day that it comes out every Thursday, the Capture the Magic Disney World podcast.
Oh, wow. You guys are a couple of onions. That's, just layers upon layers.
No offense, but that podcast sounds dumb.
Okay.
Like that just straight up just like making fun of me. Like not even like a sidestep, like just straight up. You know, we're out of material and we've gone too long.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear listener, I think we've just witnessed the end of the admissions director's launch cast. It was great while it lasted. See ya.
Mark it.
Nathan, what's your favorite thing to make in the kitchen?
Well, an old fashioned followed closely by a Mai Tai.
Okay. Wait a minute. Like you're going to have one and then chase it with a Mai Tai?
Well, depends on the day.
Okay.
But yeah, we do Hawaii Fridays in our house where we play Hawaiian music and drink a Mai Tai. So
okay.
That's what happens.
I can see that. Important question. You're in Illinois. What's going into the old fashioned?
Bourbon.
Okay. See, when you were in Wisconsin, was it brandy?
It was brandy, but we've done side by sides. When we do our supper club tours, when we go on vacation, we got a map and the whole nine yards. Oh, so we got to always try the brandy and the bourbon against each other.
Look it up, kids. It's a thing. Mm-hmm. Teach, how about you? Kitchen.
Easy.
A can of monsoon.
Fresh hand rolled pretzels like Auntie Anne's.
Oh, you made those for us when I stopped by your apartment that one time.
We made... Oh, yeah, 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 yes. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were delightful.
They're great.
Tej, what do you use to take and keep your notes?
Since 1999, I've used the same pen, a Univault Onyx Eco Micro on paper.
Do you have to change the cartridge at all, or is it just the...
No, and
they bought a supply back then.
They only come in blue, black, and red ink. But if anyone knows how to get green or purple ink in there, I would be delighted. But
does it have a cartridge in it that you can use to replace the ink?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I just have a supply.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Nathan, what do you use to take and keep your notes?
Well, I usually use a lined notebook like a Moleskine, and I have one I found on Amazon that has a pen holder, and it's like I just keep reordering it. But the pen I always do is a Pilot G2 07.
Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Memorable bit of advice you've received, Nathan.
I'm going to quote Syverson because it stuck with me for a long time during my interview at Lawrence. He said, when you try to be like the school down the street, you lose. And when they try to be like you, they lose. So lean into what's unique about your school.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Tej, how about you?
Yeah, I'm sticking with the admissions theme like Nathan. And Ken, this is genuinely advice I've given to every counselor I've trained. And it came from you on August 12th, 2008, which is we all revert to email way too much. When possible, use the phone. And Nathan, to this day on our podcast, makes fun of me for being too pro phone call in our work.
Okay.
Yep. That's true. I won't deny that.
Yeah.
Last one. Mm-hmm. Tej, presuming you have a bucket list, name an item on it that you haven't yet checked off.
I do have a bucket list. I created it when I was 30 with 100 items, and I am doing two a year until the end, right?
Including sneaking up and doing a marathon on everybody?
I did.
Was that one of them?
That was one of them, yep. And there's the two that I'm hoping for this year. I want to do Ragbri. They're a Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa, 423 miles in 1 week.
And do you start at the west and work your way east?
Yep, yep. You dip your tires in one river and end it in the other. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and you're going downhill then for some of it.
For some of it,
Some of it.
Nice. The other thing I really want to learn this year, this is like kind of understanding how other people work. I would love to expand my horizons enough to understand what would make someone who is married to a professional librarian ask his wife if she knows what an ISBN number is.
Oh my God, that's such a deep cut inside joke. Slam. I love it. I love every minute of it. This is why we do the podcast.
Okay. I knew what an ISBN was the summer I worked at Barnes & Noble, but I forgot what it stands for.
I don't know either, but I can tell you Nathan's professional librarian wife knows, and the attitude he got correctly when he asked her, do you know what an ISBN number is? Priceless.
Oh, and is it an ISBN number or is it just an ISBN?
Oh. Nathan said, do you know what an ISBN number is? Okay. Don't spin this back on me, Nathan.
Well, that was me. Nathan, how about you? Bucket list.
Bucket list / first retirement gig I'm hoping for is that I want to be the captain of the water taxi that runs between the Polynesian Resort and Magic Kingdom.
Oh, man.
It combines both of my loves.
Everything.
Boats and Disney World.
Oh, may it happen. Tej, Nathan, thank you for coming on. This was as fun and weird as I expected it to be. I hope our listeners enjoyed whatever this was. No, in all seriousness, I thank you for coming on. I know we've been talking about this for a while, and that it has finally happened makes my heart happy.
Well,
same.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. Yeah. And thank you for leading the way on the admissions podcasts and the network. And there's a lot of, can we give a plug to the NACAC podcast network?
For sure.
There's a lot out there too.
Besides
just the two of ours, but there's a lot of great things happening, and appreciate you having us on to talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you. Nathan, Tej, I will close this as I always do, which is to say, may both of you see all your big dreams come true, at least the good ones. And to you, dear listener, thanks for listening. Be well and do well.